Well, that's not the way you want to start a road trip. Walk-off home run to a rookie called up about a month ago. He's good, but obviously not the greatest pitch from Jordan Hicks, right? Blake was talking about it. A sweeper that was just about as middle-middle as you can get, maybe just lower than middle-middle, but and maybe that continues to cement the idea that Jordan Romano is the closer and everyone else is just in the mix as high-leverage relief arms. But, you know, even if this loss, a 1-0 loss to Christian Encarnacion Strand and the Cincinnati Reds in Cincinnati, even if it is literally on Jordan Hicks for throwing that pitch and getting walked off, you just can't put yourself as a team in a position where one run loses you the game. Like maybe you're, perhaps it's a different conversation if it was, let's say, a 9-8 loss and you get walked off after a whole bunch of runs score and it's a back and forth game. I feel like that is contextually, you're viewing that a little different. But in this one, you miss a bunch of batting practice fastballs right down the middle very early in this one. You end this game by getting shut out. It is it's just a little embarrassing to see, even if it has sadly become routine. No hits for the Jays after that third inning. They went down. I believe it was the third inning where Matt Chapman maybe missed a 3-run jack by what felt like feet. That was a top of the third inning, and no hits for the Jays after the top of the third inning, and that is just unacceptable. Like, Bo Bichette is probably going to come back tomorrow, as we know. I think he was with the team today. Maybe he was flying today and is going to be in the action tomorrow. He's just one guy. I am almost certainly that he is going to improve things. We heard John Schneider talk to Blair and Barker earlier today in his weekly appearance that when Bo comes back, he will likely just slot right back in there in the two hole. But even if he does improve things, damn, like there are other guys that need to turn things around when it comes to this offense. And it pretty much feels like it is literally everyone at this stage, because a 1-0 loss when you are fighting for your playoff lives is just, it, no matter how you slice it, is just not good enough. Of course, welcome to JayStock on the Sportsnet Radio Network, streaming live on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Show Ali here with you, taking your calls and texts. Phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cellular device. 590 is where you can text me. That's the people's text line, and it is always open. You know, earlier today, I was chatting with our Sportsnet colleague and my pal, Jesse Rubinoff. He was hosting one of the morning shows, and I went on with him to chat about the game tonight, and we were discussing the pitching matchup, Jose Berríos, Brett Kennedy. We'll talk about Berríos in a sec, but we both remarked that Kennedy's season ERA, even as a spot starter, I think began with a 6, and I swear we both basically tripped over ourselves to make the wry, sarcastic remark that the Jays bats were going to make this guy look like the reincarnation of Cy Young himself. And then that's exactly what they did. That is exactly what happened tonight. Like, I know Blair has discussed the idea in the past that we're just going to have to get used to seeing lower scoring games in general. And I do kind of agree with them, but also it would just be damn good to just occasionally see the bats go to town on an opposing pitcher they are supposed to go to town against. Like, I will freely admit, I have not looked up the splits or the game logs for Brett Kennedy before tonight, but I got to think that 5 scoreless is probably his best career start, I would think. I admit I don't have the numbers in front of me, but 5 scoreless innings, especially giving up some of the pitches he did, walking guys and so on, that's probably one of the best results he'll ever have. So, hey, good for him. But it is just, it would be nice to see the bats give their own pitcher some rope here. Just let the guy off the hook from time to time. Let some of the relievers off the hook from time to time. It is just always, good heavens, a tightrope being walked by every Blue Jays pitcher, especially the starters. There was a text here from DK. I had seen this earlier, and again, 590-590 is the text line, name and location. You can text me anytime. You can also give me a call, get to the phone lines in a sec. But this text from DK, it just says, has there ever been a Jays team as bad offensively, including their expansion year? We may never have a pitching staff as good as this year's. It could very well be wasted. If this team misses the postseason, it'll be the largest letdown and disappointment in franchise history. If you don't use my text, I'll wait until the end of the season, and we'll repeat these words. Okay, so look, without looking at literally every season going back to the 70s, I don't know, probably not the worst team offensively you've ever seen. Having said that, I take DK's point in the sense that when this team is playing well, offensively specifically, because we have now come to know, I think as a fact of this team, that the pitching and defense is just going to be at worst still very good. And when they are playing very well, like they did, both pitching and defense played very well for, I would say, 99% of this ball game, you're going to feel pretty good about watching the pitching and defense. It's the offense, of course, that we're consistently talking about. And I would love to just not have to talk about the offense for just one edition of JSTOC. It would be so nice. But at the same time, it's just when this team looks bad offensively, they look dreadful. Like, they really do. It is a tough watch. And I think that's where a lot of the angst comes from. And it is certainly well-deserved. I'm not criticizing anyone for being upset about it, but boy, the angst when it comes to the offense is well-deserved, because you know, they can do so much better. Or you know what? Maybe I don't know. I would like to think I do, but maybe they don't, because the truth is they have just not looked very good. Let's go to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cellular device. Go back to text line 590-590 in a couple of minutes. But to start us off, Aaron joining us from Sydney in Australia. Aaron, what's up? What's going on down under?
Hey, show. How you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, it's Saturday morning over here, so it's actually, I'm one of the only Canadians that are happy about an Apple TV broadcast, so I get to watch it down here in Sydney. Listen, just really, really frustrated by the deployment of the batting lineup. I'm sure I speak for a lot of Jays fans. I'm frustrated that David Schneider's not getting a go. You know, they brought him up for his offense. You know, you've got Bo Bichette, Kevin Kiermaier. They're both down with injuries, and we cannot find a way to get this guy in the lineup. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Obviously, we're struggling with our offense. And, you know, I'm fine with Espinal. I'm fine with Biggio. I think they're fine players. But they do not deserve to be in the lineup as often as they are over a guy that, he's still batting .385, Schneider, but the poor guy hasn't been able to get in. And it's not just that. It's Springer. You know, you got Springer. We just had an off day, and he's not in the lineup. Doesn't make sense. Varsho, at the very beginning of the season, the kid's coming in. We're all excited about him. You put him at fourth and fifth in the lineup. It's just consistently the deployment of the players and how they're used just doesn't make sense, and it's very, very frustrating.
Hey, Aaron, I appreciate the call, man. Thank you for joining me all the way from Australia here on JSTOC. You know, I feel you. When it comes to the lineup, I do agree. And as far as the Schneider, Espinal, Biggio situation goes, I got to think that will probably come to a certain head tomorrow. In one way or another, it's coming to a head tomorrow, at least for the next couple of weeks, because with Bo returning tomorrow, and I anticipate a lot of tomorrow's Jays talk is going to focus on that win or loss and how he looks and the knee and all these different things. But with Bo's return, I do wonder what the corresponding move will be versus what perhaps it should be, right? Like, Nathan Lucas was already sent down today for the return of Kevin Kiermaier. Jay Jackson was sent down for the return of Trevor Richards. And I actually do think Jackson will be back. He had an option remaining. So perhaps some roster manipulation there, I would think. But still a corresponding move to be made when Bo returns tomorrow. And it would seem the conversation largely revolves around either Davis Schneider or Santiago Espinal. Honestly, if it was up to me, I'd probably send down Paul DeJong, but he's not going to get sent down because he does not have any minor league options remaining. But if it is between Espinal and Schneider, to Aaron's point, I mean, like, is it crazy to say, kind of to his point, that I personally would also almost rather Espinal going down be the one to go down, knowing that you still have DeJong's glove at the very least available defensively? Like, Biggio, certainly not an option in terms of going down. He has been playing so well, generally speaking, as of late, and he'll certainly be in the mix in terms of batting order. Although, you know, he's batting cleanup today, but I don't think we're going to see Kevin Biggio batting cleanup too often going forward. But with Kiermaier back, you can have Merrifield at second if you need to, which is probably where he is best. But now you have a glut of middle infielders, and conventional wisdom would say Schneider is the guy to go down tomorrow when Bo returns. But like, am I crazy for saying I'd rather see what is potentially there from Davis Schneider? Like, we're far enough removed from that wild 3-game series in Boston to say that Davis Schneider will not hit like prime Babe Ruth for the rest of his career. But I don't know, that would have been nice, but there's still so much potentially there versus what we probably all know what Espinal is at this point. I don't know. If DeJong wasn't there defensively, certainly, because still offensively, it's like, so far we've seen, it's kind of like a black hole, unfortunately. But when needed, I'd probably lean Espinal if it wasn't for DeJong, but knowing that his glove is there, I don't know. Like, I think I'd rather kind of just see what there is still with Davis Schneider. But it would seem that conventional option for tomorrow would be to have Davis Schneider go down. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-660-590, *590 on your cell. Guy joining us from Maple. Guy, what's on your mind?
Hey, Shelly. Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I mean, we have a day off on Monday. We have a day off on Thursday. We got two guys in our lineup who haven't seen a major league pitch in a week and a half and 6 days. You know they're going to go 0-for-3 most likely. It's not easy to just come back after an injury. Plus three holes and Espinal, Kirk, and Guerrero. How are you going to win a game? And then you sit Springer. You don't start Schneider. Espinal is completely useless. He can't hit. He plays average defense this year. He can't run. He's the one that needs to go down to the minors. Keep Schneider up here. And you know what? You need to bring up another guy to see if you can get some at-bats where they're quality at-bats. Even Nathan Lukes had more quality at-bats than his 3 or 4 games that some of these guys have had in 2 months. I mean, it's ridiculous. What are these guys watching? Like, it seems like the fans have more common sense than Schneider. Schneider's worse than Montoyo. I mean, I don't understand what he's doing game in and game out. I understand you get the cards that are dealt to you, but to bench or to sit Springer again with this weak lineup and you don't do anything about it. You know what? They're not going to send Espinal down because they don't have it in them to do it. They're going to send Schneider down, which is the wrong move, and they need to bring another guy up. And it's been complete mismanagement between Atkins not getting a bat all season, Schneider not knowing how to manage. Mattingly, I'm not impressed with him. I honestly believe Schneider was a lot better last year than this. I don't know if it has to do with Mattingly. And Guillermo Martinez is completely useless. He's sitting in the dugout, hiding in the back. You see all the players talking to Bichette and Encarnacion and other guys, and they're not talking to him. So I'm just very frustrated, and I just want to know what your thoughts are on is it time that we bring up another bat and maybe make some sort of move where somebody unexpected needs to sit or be sent down outside of Espinal? Hang up and listen.
Guy, I appreciate the call, man. I feel the frustration. I very much appreciate it. I think a lot of people feel the same way you do. When it comes to calling up a bat, to your question, I think like the next most major league ready bat, and Casey Kandel actually was on with Blair and Barker, Buffalo Bisons manager, I think a couple of days ago. And he came on largely to talk about what he was seeing from the major leaguers that were down in the minors. He talked about Bo and Richards and Green and so on. But he was also talking a little bit about some of these bats that could get called up. And I think the guy he heaped the most praise on, and a lot of the callers and texters have talked about this guy over the next, last couple of months, I would say, is Spencer Horwitz. The only problem really is that Horwitz, like, largely, and I'm sure a lot of these younger guys can move around if they really, really needed to, but right now, for the most part, Spencer Horwitz plays at first base. And right now, you have Brandon Belt occupying a near everyday role. Certainly, you already have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. occupying an everyday role. And Spencer Horwitz, again, Kandel heaped praise upon him in the sense of he's the most professional hitter for such a young age, and he's a very advanced in his preparation and all these different things. So I suppose it could be him. But beyond Horwitz, like the only other guys I think you'd feel like the only guy perhaps you'd feel comfortable calling up from a position player's standpoint, because I mean, as much as it would be cool to see Ricky Tiedemann pitch for the Blue Jays, I'm not even sure they really have a space for him right now, given how well everyone has pitched. But I mean, the only other position player I can think of would probably be Addison Barger, I would think. And again, maybe if things were a little more dire, and it's kind of tough to say that they could be more dire, considering that if the now that the Blue Jays lost, if the Mariners win tonight, then the Blue Jays will, I believe, at the end of tonight, if the Mariners hold on. They were up 1-0 last I checked, thanks to Julio Rodriguez. But if they do hold on for that win over the Astros, then the Mariners and Jays will flip-flop, and at the end of Jays talk, very well could be that the Jays are not in a playoff position. So I'm not sure that it is necessarily going to be incumbent on a new bat from the minors. It really just is going to be incumbent, as far as I'm concerned, on the guys on this team already. And the Springer sitting thing, we'll have to wait and see what John Schneider says to the media maybe in a couple of minutes here. But, you know, George Springer certainly had the off day yesterday. I kind of wonder if they felt they could afford to rest Springer against a pitcher like Brett Kennedy, right? I'm not saying you count your chickens before they hatch necessarily, but maybe they also felt on the other side of things that perhaps Springer, an older guy, has had some injury history. You get him 2 days off and then you have him play basically every day for the rest of the week. I mean, you're going to play Saturday, Sunday, you have a day off on Monday, and then you play every game for Springer against the Baltimore Orioles when you really need to. But it is a little baffling, at the very least, not to see Springer later in this game. We didn't see him at all in this one. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Matt joining us from the West Coast. Matt calling from Vancouver. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Joe. First of all, I didn't see the game. And if Apple TV wants to take a few from us, they might as well take one of these ones. So I'm not too upset about that in the end as before, but yeah, you just kind of mentioned it right there. I've been looking at the standings, and the game I do have on right now is the one with Seattle and Houston. And I mean, I did go to the game in Seattle, two of them, the first two, and I came away kind of feeling like that looks like a team that can kind of hang with the Blue Jays. At the time, I was surprised of the separation in the standings. And I have been hearing some of the interviews, obviously, that the brass or the khakis, whatever you want to call them, have been giving. And it seems like Ross Atkins believes that they're going to get hot at some point in the schedule. So I guess I was looking at it, and it looks maybe like they think their hot streak could kind of be kind of towards the end of the month. They have like, Cleveland showed they can hang with them. They split that series, and then they play Washington, and then it looks like they got the Rockies and the Athletics after that. So if that's enough for them to get hot to hang, you know, push them back and give them enough of a start to stay ahead of Seattle. Basically, I'm just like, on a scale of 10, how concerned should we be about Seattle? They look like a team that is just ready to break the hearts of Blue Jays fans and Canada. So that's what I got, and I'd love to hear what you think about it.
Sure. Hey, Matt, appreciate you joining me. Thanks for calling from Vancouver. Look, you're not wrong. Honest to God, I am consistently shocked that the Mariners can kind of like get away with so many close games as they have even against like that Royal series, doing their best to not win a lot of those games, and they traded away their closer. They're still kind of getting away with it because hey, their best hitters are being their best hitters. I mean, tonight, I think Mike Ford hit a home run since we were last talking about it, but Julio Rodriguez is their star player, and you're getting production, at the very least recently, out of your star players. Cal Raleigh did a lot of damage in that series against the Royals, and yes, the Royals are not the best team on the face of the planet, and the Blue Jays are going to get their own shot at the Royals in the not-too-distant future. But it's true, like when it comes to the Mariners, and again, if they win tonight, they are going to be ahead of the Blue Jays in the wild card race. It's tough because they have their perhaps one of the softest parts of their schedule happening right now. Now, the Blue Jays are going to be taking on, I forget the exact order, but it's going to be in some order, the Rockies, the A's, the Guardians certainly as well, which they're not certainly one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball, but you know, they're also seemingly struggling despite the 2-2 series split just a couple of weeks ago. You know, certainly the Royals are in there as well. Like, there are a lot of teams that the Blue Jays in theory should be able to take advantage of. It's just, I'm not sure we have seen the consistent enough results to think that in four three-game series against teams that you quote-unquote should beat, the Blue Jays can be consistent enough. It's just, there was a text here, 590-590, name and location, and I was kind of laughing what we were talking about. If we can find it. Here it is. Ken in London. Show, you say they can do much better hitting. Please explain the facts and not hopes and dreams. I eagerly await it. Ken from London. The thing is that it's not that it's like some kind of fairy tale that this team has been good. Like, it just somehow every person in this lineup has seemingly underperformed at the same time. And I think that's why it's fair when people say, oh, well, it's the hitting coach. You replace the hitting coaches, replace the hitting analysts or whatever their positions are called, because it's not only Guillermo Martinez. And again, like Ben Shulman and I have talked about this in the past, I think there is some credence to the fact that when the team was very good offensively in 2021, largely the same guys in 2022, when you also had a pretty decent offense, also largely the same guys, and you also didn't have Marcus Semien, for example, last season. So, like, how much could have really changed year over year when you have virtually the same guys, and then you add someone like Don Mattingly? It's just kind of, it's kind of wild, to Guy's point from earlier. Like, how can you have Don Mattingly and then have your team get so much worse offensively? Like, I truly believe it goes beyond just, like, beyond simply saying, oh, we traded Teoscar Hernandez, we traded Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Like, those guys absolutely would help when it comes to offensive production, but their absence, and again, you can probably point a little bit to protection and so on, different guys in the order, and you know, I think that matters to a certain degree, but not when everyone is struggling like this. Like, everyone, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., George Springer has looked better as of late, but as we're talking about, he didn't play tonight, and he hasn't looked super consistent, even though he has looked better after the 0-for-35 slide. Chapman has not looked great. Kirk has not looked great. And yes, Kevin Kiermaier and Chapman, for example, first time coming off the IL, but three hits tonight for the Blue Jays. I think three hits and two walks was the balance of the scoring in a shutout 1-0 loss. That is not good. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. I almost forgot the numbers, which is crazy because they're right here in front of me. Let's go back to the phones. Bob calling in from Toronto. Bob, what's on your mind?
Hi, show. You in your opening comments made the perfect word, said the perfect word, which was unacceptable. There's no other way of describing this team right now. The Cincinnati Reds bring up a pitcher from the Independent League with an earned run average something like 6 and so on, and we can't score a run off him in the game at all. I think it's time that word unacceptable be said by John Schneider. John is a good guy. I understand that. But it's time that he showed us that he is really not accepting this sort of thing anymore, and not accepting it. I know you said about the hitting coaches and last year and so on. Last year is last year. This year is still the hitting coach, and if he was that good last year to help them, then what is he doing now? That's the other way to look at it. I think they're not doing what they need to do to correct. You keep hearing about the fact that Vladdy can't catch up to a fastball, or that Marshall maybe he's doing a toe tap and now he's going to start hitting a little better. Let's hear from Schneider about answers to some of these questions, and let's hear from the hitting coaches in the same way. John Schneider, come on the air and say, this is not acceptable. We've got to play better.
Hey, Bob, I appreciate the call, man. I agree with you. I 1,000% think that these kinds of outputs, like, you're going to lose games. It's not as though you're just like never going to lose a game if you're the Blue Jays or really any team in any sport ever, but it's just the way they're losing these games when the offense looks so lifeless sometimes. You know what the wildest thing to me is? We just saw, what day is today? Today is Friday. So I guess on Sunday, back at the Rogers Center, because we had the mini two-game series against the Phillies. There were days off in kind of around those games, the day off yesterday, day off on Monday. On Sunday, I was down at the Dome with Ben Shulman, and the Blue Jays annihilated the Chicago Cubs. What was the final score? It was 11-4 or something like that. And that team looks wildly different from the team we saw tonight or at for large stretches of the series against the Phillies, even frankly earlier in the series against the Cubs. They lost the first two games of that series against the Cubs. It is just wild to see the difference in approach. And again, it's not as the Hunter Greene for the Reds, he's going to come off the IL. I don't know if he actually already has or if he will come off in some kind of procedural move for the Reds on Sunday, but he's going to pitch for the Reds on Sunday, and he's pretty nasty, young guy, throws some filthy stuff. I'm not here to like bag on Brett Kennedy by any means, but Brett Kennedy is not, it's not Clayton Kershaw going out there, right? There's not like, I don't know, Randy Johnson out there. It's a guy who's a spot starter coming in for an NL Central team that has largely, outside of guys like Andrew Abbott and so on, struggled with starting pitching. Like, they just, I think the Reds just DFA'd Luke Weaver not too long ago because they had been struggling so much and gave Brett Kennedy a start because they need more innings, and the Blue Jays can't get a quality approaches. There was a text here from someone. I don't think there's actually a name on this one. So do send me your name and location just so I can give you a shout out. But you know, like there's one from Stephen Williams, for example, Stephen in Williams Lake in BC, pardon me. Stephen says, if we can't get any hits against these average slash decent pitchers during the regular season, what hope do we have against the Jays hitting against the league's best pitchers? What are we to do? There's another one. I'm just so bleeping, that's okay, pissed off and frustrated a lot of myself because I'm one of the idiots that drank the Kool-Aid about how good this team was going to be. The crazy thing is, like, the team is still very good. It's just not good in the ways you expected necessarily. Like, the offense should be far better than this, and yet, like we're talking about, everyone underperforming at the same time. Bob wanted to hear from John Schneider. John Schneider did, or at least is, speaking to the media. Let's hear a little bit of what he had to say about, of course, the lack of offense tonight.
It just wasn't our night, really. You know, I think we had pitches to hit. We didn't hit them that were in the zone that we usually do. And, you know, kind of got in a little bit of a rut there in the middle of the game. But I think it just kind of wasn't our night. You know, just looking back at pitches, you know, they were there. And I think we just missed our pitches to hit tonight. I think it's just how they're executing. You know, I think that, you know, the prep work is there. I think, you know, they were, for the most part, you know, Witt gets a hit, steals second. You know, Varsh gets a hit, you know, second inning, whatever it was. And I think after that, it was kind of just missing our pitches. So it just comes down to executing.
You know, generally speaking, I do take coaches, managers in baseball, but just generally speaking, I take coaches at their word. I do think after a 1-0 loss, hearing the manager say, it just wasn't our night, I don't think is going to, you know, make it too many people feel good about what went on, because it's true. Like, kind of to Bob's point, like, I'm not saying John Schneider doesn't take accountability, because I actually genuinely believe he does take accountability when he really, really needs to. And yeah, I mean, look, it's August 18th. It's a tough loss because, not just because it was a kind of a lifeless offensive performance, but also because there are teams like breathing down the Blue Jays' neck. So I get why it hurts a lot more than a normal mid-August loss probably would, but boy, it does kind of somewhat feel like you kind of hand wave it away when you hear answers like, it's just not our night. And maybe that's true. Like, the other thing is, it could, what he's saying could very well be true. They missed a bunch of fastballs that were thrown at like 91, 92 miles an hour from Brett Kennedy right down the middle, like batting practice throws that you see when there's no one on base, you know, when the cages are up right down the middle, and they just, for whatever reason, didn't swing at those pitches. So I'm not sure what they were seeing. Maybe they were just, and they being the Blue Jays batters, maybe they were expecting something else, but boy, it just, that is not the approach you want to see from your team's best hitters. You know, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll go back to the phones. A lot of people still on the line, and go back to the text line, and it is absolutely blowing up. So we'll be here for a little while longer. You're listening to Jays Talk, Show Ali with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, he was awesome. You know, I think the only blemish really for him was pitch count. You know, a couple of walks that were kind of uncharacteristic of him, but great life on his fastball up to 97. He was spotting the ball, you know, well, you know, kind of caught up a little bit in the third inning with a quick inning, but I thought he was outstanding. You know, didn't give up a hit to the sixth, wiggled out of some trouble too, but, you know, he was dialed in, man. His stuff was good, and I think team like this, you know, you just can't really issue that many free passes, and if he didn't, he may still be pitching right now, but I thought he was really, really good tonight.
That is John Schneider discussing the night from Jose Berríos, who absolutely deserved a better fate. He did not get the win, or at the very least, he didn't take the loss, I suppose, which is a win. But the way he was pitching, I definitely think he deserved a better fate, and I dare say many of you guys think that as well. Welcome back to Jay's Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali with you for another 15 minutes or so as we discuss the Blue Jays 1-0 walk-off shutout loss to the Cincinnati Reds in the first of three. Chris Bassitt will head to the mound tomorrow for the Blue Jays. Before we go back to the phones and go back to the text line, let's go to the Major League Standings Watch presented by Bet365. With Bet365, you can watch thousands of live games, build your own bet, and you can even make a bet while the game is still being played. 19 plus, play responsibly. Ontario only. So all the teams in the American League East in action tonight, and certainly all the teams around, in and around the Blue Jays as well. So here's how some of the games are going. Boston crushed New York, the Red Sox taking on the Yankees in a matchup that, like, oddly, like in the years past, Red Sox Yankees had a lot of like shine to it. I'm not so sure right now Red Sox Yankees has as much shine as it used to, but the Red Sox hammered the Yankees 8-3 today in the Bronx. So New York falling further under 500 in that one. The Rays are on the West Coast, as are the Orioles. The Rays are taking on the Angels in Los Angeles. The game is tied 1-1 currently. The Orioles are currently leading the Athletics 3-1. And we did talk about the Mariners game. They're taking on the Astros, actually, which are two teams that are, at the very least right now, right sandwiched around the Blue Jays. The Astros in the number two wildcard spot. Jays in the third wildcard spot for now. Mariners, the very next team, knocking on the door in the, I guess, the fourth spot, if you want to call it that. But the Mariners leading still 2-0 in the bottom of the seventh inning over the Astros at Minute Maid Park. So here are the standings, keeping in mind, of course, that some of these games are still going on. The Baltimore Orioles atop the division are 74-47 entering play tonight against the A's. The Rays 73-50 entering play against the Angels. The Blue Jays with the loss 67-56. The Boston Red Sox with the win are 64-58. They are 2.5 games back of the Jays in that final wild card spot. The Yankees 60-62. And if we take a look at the wild card race, of course, the Blue Jays and the Mariners technically, by winning percentage, are even right now. But of course, if the Mariners win, they will hold the final wild card spot over the Toronto Blue Jays. Houston right now, record-wise, is 70-52, so they could be 70-53 if they do drop that game to Seattle. That's a quick check of the Major League Standings Watch presented by Bet365. I did want to talk just very briefly, before we go back to the phones, about Jose Berríos, just because, we heard Schneider talk about him. He was great, I thought, today. You know, after a start, he wasn't so great, perhaps, against the Cubs. You don't have too many starts in a row where Berríos, certainly this year at the very least, where Berríos has blow up games. So the final line for him, 5 2/3, one hit, no runs. He did walk 4, but he did have 8 strikeouts. So he did get hosed a couple of times in this one, perhaps most notably in that second inning on what was just a terrible call to Tyler Stevenson. It was 100% a strike. Yes, it was on the edge of the zone. So it's kind of hard to argue sometimes with those ones that are with a naked eye being seen at the edge of the zone. Kirk framed it pretty well, I thought, as well, and that would have ended the inning. Instead, the count 3-2 after that, Stevenson eventually walks. Thankfully, it didn't bite him in the end because he strikes out Will Benson like right after that. But I suppose it did even out very late in this one, and Ben and Blake talked about it on the broadcast. Alexis Diaz, who is nasty, paints the corner on a 2-2 pitch right in the lower right corner as you're watching it on the broadcast, and that should have, frankly, sent Biggio back to the dugout. It's called a ball, and then Biggio is called out on a strike that was placed in almost literally the exact same place. And now that's a strike, but that's tough. Like, man, he even said, you could hear him on the radio broadcast. You could hear the words out of Biggio's mouth. And I think what he had said was, it was literally the same pitch, which is hilarious because how often do you hear those conversations between players and umpires? But he's right. Another glaring example in both cases for both the Reds and for the Blue Jays when we're discussing the Berríos pitch to Stevenson earlier, perhaps just another example of why the naked eye for humans perhaps should not be doing this. Again, it's not an easy job by any means, and the umpire himself does grade out, generally speaking, pretty well, all things considered. But it is another example for the robots. Also, I am thankful that Berríos did not suffer anything serious when he got hit by that comebacker as well. Great play by him on that hit to knock the ball down. He threw from his knees to second base, get the lead runner. Great stuff by him. But hey, I mean, Barrios was great tonight. He has been great for so much of the season, right? He allowed the first base hit of the game with one out in the sixth inning. Matt McClain gets aboard with a single. And up until that point, he was largely ahead in the count. The slurve looked great. The changeup was effective. And those two pitches have been largely extremely effective for him all season long. McClain singled off the sinker. I didn't really mind the move to take Barrios out with Votto coming to the plate with runners on first and third. Like, he had already gotten through parts of top of the order, like, relatively speaking, unscathed, considering there were no runs in that up until that point in the game. And the last time up, Joey Votto blasted a ball to the moon, albeit very foul. So perhaps best to not play with fire, even if it does mean Barrios is somewhat robbed of a better fate. Certainly he could have gotten a quality start had he gotten just one more out, and he pitched very well overall tonight. And then you go to the bullpen, and again, it's kind of, again, hard to argue with going to the bullpen after a day off. But again, this loss does not fall on the defense. It does not fall on Barrios or the bullpen. I mean, certainly it falls at least to a certain extent on Jordan Hicks, because this is a guy who can throw 102 miles an hour, and he's throwing a sweeper to get blasted by a rookie who is also very talented. But I mean, I don't know. Use your speed. We have seen him, and the last time up he did this effectively. We have seen him. I think Caleb Joseph has used the term yo-yo guys, like, to kind of rock batters with like 102 miles an hour, then an 85 mile an hour pitch, then back up to the triple digits. We've seen him do that to, relatively speaking, great effect this season, but did not see that. Did not see that tonight. All right, let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Bill calling in from Lindsay. Bill, what's on your mind?
Hey, show, how's it going?
Could be better, Bill. No one likes 1-0 walk-off losses.
No, I understand that. It's terrible. And the one thing for me is it's a bit of a contradiction in some ways, because I'm a lifelong or a franchise-long Jays fan,
okay,
but I'm a lifelong Cincinnati Reds fan because, I'm older than the Jays are. So I follow both teams very closely.
Why the Reds? Can I just ask, Bill, why the Reds specifically?
Well, because when I was young, they were an incredible team, and I was 8 years old when the Big Red Machine started taking off.
Okay.
And of course, that team was just unbelievable. So they were, you know, back in those days, you only got one game per week, essentially. And they were televised more than every team, essentially, because they were, you know, the best team back then. And I've latched onto them ever since. Plus, I'll be quick with this, but my favorite number is 11 because of Gilbert Perreault. I'm a lifelong Sabres and Bills fan.
Okay.
So I also love the Reds, and I also love Barry Larkin. So I have a Barry Larkin shirt because he wore number 11. He's my favorite shortstop, Hall of Famer as well.
Yeah.
So all those things kind of tie up with each other. And just on a little bit of an aside, I'd like to say rest in peace to Rick Jeanneret.
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful broadcaster and a wonderful man. And it's been a tough day. Tough last couple of days for fans of the Sabres.
Yeah,
world.
Legendary broadcaster. And I think the May Day call will live forever. It absolutely will.
It will, and funny enough, I was first row behind the Boston bench for that game.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. So I saw quickly. I mean, now we're a bit off track, but this is pretty cool that towards RJ, Rick Jeanneret, I looked over as soon as it happened, because it happened right in front of me, one of the greatest goals ever at the comeback in the whole nine yards. But anyway, I said to my buddy, I said, oh my God, when I looked over at Rick, he was almost fell out of the booth. And I had no idea what he was saying at that point, because it was all happening at once. So of course, back in those days, there was no internet or anything. So we waited till we went out in the street for the big party. And of course, all the cars are playing the huge call. So I was like, that's what he was saying. No wonder. So anyway, sorry, I got off track there. But as far as the Reds and the Jays go, of course the Jays played the NL Central this year, and the NL Central is quite maligned, almost the, you know, that and the AL Central, I guess. But this is the fourth team they're playing. And if they lose another one to the Reds, they'll have lost 3 out of 4 series to the NL Central. And the only team they would have beaten would have been the Pirates, or is the Pirates. Which everybody's supposed to beat the Pirates. So, you know, it's funny because they're both kind of mirroring each other right now as far as being on the edge of the playoffs, and they're both having actually the pitching's not been terrible for the Reds, but their hitting's been bad. That's why this game was so low scoring, I'm thought, pretty much, because the Jays are in the same boat that way. But anyway, it just shows that, you know, this the NL Central, how, is it better than what it's supposed to be, or are the Jays just middling in that area? Anyway, I thought I'd bounce that off you.
Yeah, hey Bill, I appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us here on Jays Talk tonight after a tough loss. It's true. I mean, you look at the NL Central. Brewers in this order. This is how the standings shake out for the NL Central: Brewers, Reds, Cubs, Pirates, and Cardinals. And I mean, the Blue Jays struggled with the Cardinals early in the season, like in the literal very beginning of the season. And you're right, they beat the Pirates, and that was a fun series. But then again, the Pirates, and even though the Pirates were, you know, quote unquote, good at the time when the Blue Jays played them, they have certainly not been since. They're 54-67. It's true. It's a super odd split with the NL Central this season, because the Blue Jays have beaten up on virtually every other team, it kind of feels like, right? They did beat the Brewers ultimately this season, but boy, it's just strange to see that it's the NL Central that they, I don't want to say necessarily struggle against, but you definitely feel like there should be better results, I would think. Ben Shulman texted me to say they did beat the Brewers in a series, I believe. No texting while you're driving, Ben. Stop texting. I know where you live. I'm going to report you. No texting while driving, but I will see you tomorrow. I see some other texts here on the text line. There's actually no name on this one. It just says earlier in the season, they got no hit by the Tigers. As Iverson would say, practice. We talking about practice. There's another one here. Let's see. Tom in Orangeville says, I think that caller meant making the players accountable. It's almost September and we're still talking about effort, approach, stupid base running mistakes. These guys aren't named Alomar, White, Carter, etc. You can't just let them be tough. Hold them accountable. I do think that is happening, but it's just so wild that it's all happening. Like, if we said this before, like you can kind of sort of with batting order things, you can kind of hide guys if you need to, like you can kind of move things around and manipulate the lineup to a certain extent to make sure you hide some of your lesser quote unquote batters. But you can't really do that when literally everyone is performing poorly. Maybe literally is I shouldn't say literally, because there are some guys that are playing well, like Whit Merrifield, for example, continues to play well, both on the bases, base running in the field with the defense, whether he's in left or second, and certainly at the plate as well. But I don't know. It's hard to give too much praise to pretty much anyone on a night where you score a big fat zero runs. I see another one here from Mike in St. John. He says, hey, show, my favorite part of the game was hearing the Two Men and a Truck song. That song is a banger. You know what it is? It is quite the earworm, I will say. Maybe that's because I hear it like a million times a day, as does Tom Young and Nick Blackmore. Mike says, Espinal needs to be sent down. DeJong gets DFA'd. We bring up Ernie Clement, who's raking in AAA, and then activate Bichette. Move Bo to third in the lineup, bat Witt and Springer before him. So, Mike, if you did miss this, and again, things could certainly change, but Blair and Barker had their weekly chat with Schneider earlier today, and I think Kevin straight up asked him, like, are you just going to have Bo in the two-hole when he comes back? And he kind of just said yes. Like, he just straight up said, yeah, he's going to bat second. And I think they kind of talked around it a little bit, like, could that change down the road? And it's very possible it could change. But I do think at the very least for the rest of the series, and this kind of sounds like they're gonna ease Bo back into it. So I kind of wonder if that means he might even DH tomorrow. But I would think you're gonna at the very least see Merrifield, Bo, maybe Springer, Vladdy. I could see something like that. Maybe you have Belton there if you really want to mix it up, depending on who's on the mound tomorrow for the Reds, because you know they like to get a lefty bat a little higher if they can. But a top four of Witt, Bo, Springer, Vladdy, I think that sounds okay. But, you know, on Vladdy, there was a text here from earlier. I'm just going to find it real quick because here it is. Tina from London. Can we please discuss honestly about Vladdy? I've had it. It's September. So please don't say it's early. Well, it's August, but I take your point. Tonight, Belt battles 10 pitches to take a walk, and then Vladdy takes the first hit, fly ball. It doesn't leave the infield. I know our bench is not deep, but we don't need Vladdy hitting third, fourth, or fifth. There's a lot more to the text as well, but look, the problem is, like, he's not hitting well. You're not wrong. He's not. But at the same time, he is not going to hit lower than fourth or fifth, I would think, right? Like, he's not hitting in the lower half of this lineup, because I don't think anyone wants to see Vladdy hitting below Varsho or Kirk at this point, or Chapman or any of the other guys. That's just not going to happen. But there's no question that he needs to play better. Right, and your point, Tina, is well taken about Belt working a long AB for a walk, and then he lifts a long fly ball to left field. I did want to take a sec to promote an article that I think would interest many of you. on MLB.com or BlueJays.com, written by Mike Petriello, and you can often see him on Blue Jays Central. The article is titled 11 Theories Explaining Vlad's Confusing 2023 Season. I heartily recommend you check it out because it addresses a lot of the things we consistently discuss on Jays Talk. But I hope we don't have to talk about it too much tomorrow. But, you know, Bo Bichette, again, I said this off the top, Bo Bichette is just but one man. He can only do so many things. And I'm no doubt he will make the offense better, but I'm not sure it will solve everything. Thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Crown Rust Protection. New and used vehicle prices are rising and inventory is scarce. Avoid the hassle of buying prematurely by making your vehicle last longer with Crown Rust Protection. For a special summer offer on rust protection, visit crown.com today. For Ben Shulman, Blake Murphy, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali. We're out of here. Let's hope for one run. Let's ask for just one run tomorrow. Let's hope for that tomorrow. Talk to you then.